Our view is that it's going to be a sharp pinch, and it's going to definitely leave a mark on the economy, but it's not going to be a real knockout blow to the economy.
The economic outlook for Anchorage. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Wednesday, July 27th. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, a successful rescue of crew members from a distressed vessel off the Aleutians.
These individuals, all these 46 people, are actually extremely lucky.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
Alaska Clean Harbors reminds you to slow down and take care with any cleaning, fueling, or painting products while maintaining your boat this summer. Be smart to save money and protect our marine environment and our beautiful ocean and coastline. Let's keep the water clean and keep our fish healthy. For more information, go to alaskacleanharbors.org. This message is sponsored by Cook Inlet Keeper with funding from the Coastal Impact Assistance Program.
The new chairwoman of the Alaska Democratic Party says supporters of Bernie Sanders are reinvigorating the party. But along with the new enthusiasm, the Alaska Sanders supporters also bring deep wells of dissatisfaction. APRN's Liz Ruskin reports from the Democratic National Convention in Philadelphia.
Casey Steinau of Big Lake became chair of the Alaska Democratic Party in January. Even though the state's registered Republicans outnumber Democrats nearly 2-1, Steinau is an optimist.
Alaska is moving towards the purple at the state level, and this is how it's going to happen. With the people who were inspired by Senator Sanders and who come to the party and want to be involved and engaged and help make a difference.
That was Steinau on Tuesday, while the roll call was underway to nominate Hillary Clinton for president.
The party is unifying. We're getting it together. We're moving forward.
Then, right after the nomination, scores of Sanders supporters walked out of the arena. It was a protest convention delegate Jill Yorty of Fairbanks helped organize. Yorty says state and national party leaders must make room for progressives.
They need to actually show with integrity and honesty that they can open the doors and let people in and let people be part of the process without trying to manage or direct how the party goes.
Yorty was state director of the Sanders campaign and used a crowdfunding website to raise more than $3,000 for her trip to Philadelphia. Her complaints about the party range from the general, about exclusion of their ideas, to the specific, like the hiring for staff jobs within the state party.
Those are positions that are often not announced publicly. There's no application process. It is all about who you know. And that, I think, is a disservice to Alaskan Democrats because it means we're potentially missing out on some of the best candidates to help move the party forward and help get progressive goals into Alaskan government.
Alternate delegate D.R.C. Hutchings, a librarian from Anchorage, posted a video to explain the walk-off protest to her followers on Facebook.
It wasn't meant to be a fit about Bernie not being elected, which could be seen as childish or sore losers, that sort of thing. That's not what it was about. It was really about us saying that we aren't going to stand by and let this entire convention go by without our voices being heard. Well, we're not going to let this go by being a giant Hillary party.
The next morning at a breakfast session, Hutchings heard the vice chair of the Democratic National Committee apologize for what leaked emails revealed, that some party officials were biased against Sanders. To Hutchings, his words were insufficient. She shouted her go-to slogan when confronted with what she sees as an unfair process.
This is what democracy looks like!
Show me what democracy looks like.
This is what democracy looks like!
One of Hutchings' grievances has to do with superdelegates. The National Party created a role for unbound superdelegates in the 1980s to give party stalwarts more say in who gets nominated and ensure the continuation of party values. Hutchings says it's not right that even though Sanders won the Alaska Democratic caucuses by a huge margin, three of the state's four superdelegates voted for Clinton Tuesday night.
Those would be Casey Steinau, the party chair, Ian Olson, as well as Kim Metcalf. And I would like to see a public apology to the Alaska people saying that they swayed our votes from 82% Bernie to at this convention making it 70% Bernie.
But isn't that their role as superdelegates to vote their conscience?
It is their role as superdelegates as far as their ability to vote for who they want to.
But she says they should have followed the will of the voters. Hutchings says she's voted Democratic her whole adult life, 15 years, but she wasn't involved in the party structure until this spring. She says the exclusion she felt at the state caucus and after has cemented her commitment. She was a delegate at the state convention, and now she's on the party's central committee.
And you're going to see me continue on this path. They have radicalized me.
Chairman Steinau says the party is responding. She says she'll broaden the hiring process for any vacancy among the party's 4 paid staff.
I think that is absolutely a priority, and I hear that, and I am with them.
The party is also considering ways to reform the superdelegate system following a resolution at the state convention. Reporting from Philadelphia, I'm Liz Ruskin.
46 crew members were rescued last night after their fishing vessel started sinking in the Aleutians. And now officials are working on a rescue plan for the abandoned trawler. The Alaska Jurist began taking on water yesterday afternoon near Kiska Island, nearly 700 miles west of Dutch Harbor. Crew members donned survival suits, sent a distress signal, and jumped ship for 3 life rafts.
These individuals, all these 46 people, are actually extremely lucky.
Petty Officer John Paul Rios says the U.S. Coast Guard received the distress call and coordinated the response from Kodiak. 3 Good Samaritan vessels joined the rescue effort, along with a Coast Guard cutter, 2 C-130 airplanes, and 2 helicopters.
While they were taking the people off of the life rafts, putting it onto the Good Samaritan vessels, we also had a total of 4 aircraft in the air just making sure that nothing went wrong.
With all crew members safe and on their way to ADAC, Rio says the Coast Guard is now focusing on what to do about the Alaska Jurist still floating in the same area of the Bering Sea. He says a C-130 search crew will fly over the abandoned vessel today and assess the situation.
They're going to fly over where the vessel's last known position was. They're going to try to determine if there's any kind of pollution and then also what the salvage plan would be if possible.
There's no word yet on where the ship will be taken, according to officials with the Coast Guard's Marine Safety Detachment Unit in Dutch Harbor. It'll depend on whether the vessel can be repaired and how its owner wants to proceed. The trawler is owned by the Fishing Company of Alaska. Another FCA ship, the Alaska Ranger, sank in 2008 and killed 5 people. The Coast Guard is now investigating the current incident on the Alaska Jurist. Officials say there were calm seas and limited visibility when crew members were rescued. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, what it takes to be in shape as a wildland firefighter.
Thank God we did do the hills because the fire we're on right now, it's just a good 45-minute hike straight up.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Alaska Pipeline Service Company, Alaska's pipeline to the future that delivers oil today and sustains operations for tomorrow. The Medallion Foundation and the Federal Aviation Administration provide information on passengers' rights and responsibilities. More information at faa.gov/go/flyalaska. This message is sponsored by the Medallion Foundation.
The Anchorage Economic Development Corporation's annual forecast for the local economy is usually pretty sunny. But the steep drop in oil prices last year means Anchorage and Alaska are in the midst of the first economic downturn in nearly 3 decades. Alaska Public Media's Graylin Brashear was at the AEDC's Economic Outlook Luncheon and has the story.
Anchorage Economic Development Corporation CEO Bill Popp says if you want to sum up the forecast for the pain that plunging oil prices are going to deliver to Anchorage and Alaska, you should think pinch, not punch.
Our view is that it's going to be a sharp pinch, and it's going to definitely leave a mark on the economy, but it's not going to be a real knockout blow to the economy.
And that was the overall message at the AEDC's annual economic forecast luncheon, where 1,500 members of the local business community gathered at the Dena Center in downtown Anchorage Wednesday. Yes, we're looking at the first economic downturn in 27 years, but things could be a lot worse. Here's the outlook as Pop explained it before the milling attendees settled down to lunch and a string of speakers. Anchorage is going to shed about 1,600 jobs in 2016 and nearly as many next year. That's about a 1% loss annually. The biggest job losses will be in oil and gas and professional and business services. Plus, the state's capital budget dropping to just about nil means construction is also taking a big hit. And that has a ripple effect on retail and service employment.
Those are high-paying jobs, and they have a much more significant multiplier effect in the broader economy.
But Pop says some of those jobs could come back in 2019 if oil rebounds and starts pulling the economy back up. He says a lot of industry watchers are expecting per-barrel prices to return to the high $50 range within a few years, but they're not going to bounce back to where they were pre-2015.
We really don't like it, but it is what it is, and we've got to deal with the new reality of lower long-term prices.
But Pop says the good news is that Alaska is much more diversified than it was the last time the oil-based economy sputtered badly in the late 1980s. And that's reflected in the fact that some of the news coming out of this year's economic outlook is good. The healthcare and tourism industries have seen significant growth already this year. And Pop says the housing market isn't as bad as some are saying.
We're actually sailing through this with pain, but not, you know, devastating pain.
He does say there's something everybody here should be worried about. And that's how you're feeling right now. The AEDC tracks something called the Anchorage Consumer Optimism Index, and in 2016, it hit an all-time low.
We attribute that to uncertainty and also the emotions of the times. You know, when you see nothing but bad news, and you hear nothing but bad news, either, you know, in the media or from your friends or on social media, it tends to be difficult not to be pessimistic.
In other words, even if a lot of economic markers are pointing to a pinch, locals are fearing a punch. At the end of his forecast speech to the assembled business community, Pop drove home the danger of that shaky consumer confidence.
And if business and consumers lose much more confidence in our economy, they will stop investing, spending, and making the current economic situation much worse than it needs to be.
He says a big part of the problem is that state government still hasn't come up with a long-term fiscal plan. If there's one urgent takeaway from the economic report, he says, it's this. Put pressure on the state to come up with a budget people can be confident in. Not easy, he says, but...
we Alaskans do love a challenge.
In Anchorage, I'm Graylin Brashear.
The Anchorage Assembly voted unanimously last night to approve the first commercial cannabis business in the municipality to move forward, setting the stage for crops of legal marijuana to be planted in the weeks ahead. The step is one of the first meaningful tests of the local approval process in the state. But as Alaska Public Media's Zechariah Hughes reports, the body held up another permit from passage in a sign local officials want the final say in determining which businesses will be allowed to open.
Assembly members were basically triple-checking the applications by two prospective cannabis-growing businesses. The two applicants have already both been green-lighted by the state, as well as Anchorage's Planning and Zoning Board. And when assembly members discussed the first application, submitted by Green Dream Farms for a conditional land use permit, they were extremely impressed.
This is the most detailed business plan I've ever seen. To top this one, it's going to really take something.
Assemblymember Pete Peterson was hardly alone in heaping praise on Green Dream. Owner Justin Rowland says he and his business partners have invested around $250,000 into the venture just getting it to this point. And part of that includes legal advice to get the application aligned with state and local codes. Rowland says the local approval vote was one of the last major hurdles.
So basically, we haven't completed the project to build out the facility. We've been waiting, especially on special land use, to complete the project because we didn't want to put that kind of investment into the project without knowing that we were going to be good for that location. So we complete that now, we'll get plants in the ground, we'll get state inspection come in, and then we'll be growing.
Though Anchorage's review criteria for the municipal license is similar to the one used by state officials with the Alcohol and Marijuana Control Office, some prospective businesses see it as an unnecessarily burdensome step. The Fairbanks North Star Borough, by contrast, has no local license requirement, and its planning commission has approved dozens of prospective businesses. Roland says his company expects to have cannabis products to sell come January 1st and already has prospective clients. First, though, they'll need their local permits approved, too. But the night's second license review didn't go as well. Several assembly members objected to issues raised in the business plan brought forward by Bryant Thorpe of Arctic Herbery, specifically that his location is near residential properties and that he plans to eventually apply for a retail license in the same location. After a lengthy discussion, the assembly referred the application to a committee focused on community and economic development for a closer review. And what followed was a motion to refer all future cannabis applications to the same committee. The idea being that a smaller, more technically minded body is able to better assess whether or not a business applicant's vision meshes with local standards. Assemblymember Patrick Flynn was excused from voting after disclosing that he owns a small stake in a cultivation business that'll be coming before the assembly in the near future. In Anchorage, I'm Zachariah Hughes.
An estimated 16,000 pounds of chum salmon were destroyed after a truck overturned in downtown Juneau Monday afternoon. The spill blocked Egan Drive, a major roadway leading in and out of downtown. Jason Wired is with the Department of Environmental Conservation's Food Safety and Sanitation Program.
We have a limited number of processors here in town that can handle that volume, so I just started making some phone calls to find out whose fish it belonged to.
He says Taku Fisheries, a local business, owned the truck. The business name on the totes was Icy Strait. Wired says the fish were destroyed after being considered unsafe for consumption since they fell onto a roadway. News of the accident quickly spread through the town, with some drivers holding up traffic by taking photos.
And I think the time of day was a big issue. You know, right at that 5 o'clock traffic, right downtown when people are trying to get in and out of town, had a big impact on that whole fiasco. And yeah, and today with social media being the way it is, it was instantaneous. Everybody kind of knew.
Although it's rare for a truckload of spilled fish to block a major roadway in the capital city, Wired says it's not the first time.
I think it has happened in recent years, just on a smaller scale. I believe one of their competitors, it happened where they lost a tote of fish. A single tote, by the way, not 16 totes.
The truck driver was taken to Bartlett Regional Hospital and released the same day. The overturned truck caused a traffic jam for roughly 3 hours. After a dozen employees from Taku Fisheries helped pick up the fish, the road was cleaned and sanded. Taku Fisheries could not be reached for comment.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Wells Fargo, extending its support of Alaska residents beyond banking by supporting the programming of public radio throughout Alaska, giving back to the community. Wells Fargo, together we'll go far.
Boating accidents happen even to experienced boaters and even on calm, sunny days. This boating season, make your friends and loved ones promise to always wear a life jacket and carry emergency communication and distress signaling devices. Visit pledgetolive.org, where you can file a float plan, get marine weather forecasts, and download a pre-departure checklist. This message sponsored by the Alaska Office of Boating Safety.
A Fairbanks restaurant is in trouble with the state over a golf game that often sends balls into the Chena River. As KYC's Dan Bross reports, the driving range on the deck of Pike's Landing has closed due to environmental concerns.
Patrons at Pike's Landing can no longer try to hit golf balls across the Chena River. Pike's challenges customers to buy a ball and drive it across the water, but many end up in the river. And Department of Environmental Conservation Compliance Officer Tiffany Larson says that's illegal.
We're determining what level of violation it is because it affects water violations or solid waste violations, and we're trying to ascertain exactly what's the composition of a golf ball and what does it constitute.
Larson says the issue was never previously raised, and the state only began looking into it after a complaint was filed earlier this month by Anchorage environmental activist Rick Steiner. Steiner says he was on his way home following a float trip in gates of the Arctic National Park when he stopped in Fairbanks.
And came coming through Pikes and some of these people then hitting golf balls right into the river and couldn't believe it.
Steiner, a biologist and former University of Alaska Marine Conservation professor, says golf balls are slightly negatively buoyant in fresh water, meaning they likely carry downstream to the Tanana and Yukon rivers and eventually the Bering Sea, where denser ocean water floats them to the surface, and the golf balls can be eaten by wildlife.
And I have, in my work in the northwestern Hawaiian Islands, found hundreds of dead albatross chock full of plastic items, and a lot of these dead albatross had golf balls in them. They've also shown up in dead whale carcasses on beaches and such like that.
Steiner admits there's no evidence of golf balls from Pikes ending up in the ocean or wildlife, but the restaurant's driving range has likely sent thousands of balls into the Chena River. Pikes owner, former state legislator Jay Ramres, says the range dates back to before he bought the restaurant and lodge in 1999, and that he's being unfairly singled out among local golf venues.
Who all have state waterways that run through their properties and all have ball hazards. We serve 1,600 golfers, roughly, per summer. I'm quite certain that there are more golfers on the other three golf courses in Fairbanks, you know, who are hitting into water hazards that are also state waterways every day of the summer.
Ramres cites numerous environmentally beneficial projects at Pikes, including solar energy, composting, and a hydroponic greenhouse, as well as river protection efforts with various agencies and groups. Ramres says he immediately closed down the golf venue after talking to the DEC, but has yet to receive an official compliance letter.
Give me a letter, tell me what I did wrong, and I will go about correcting it right away. But meanwhile, I'm a damaged small business guy who wants to do the right thing, whose good name and good stewardship of the river has been swamped by, you know, a curious media and a non-responsive state agency.
A study found a standard plastic golf ball could take up to 1,000 years to naturally degrade, releasing toxins as it does. Specific to Pikes, the DEC's Larson says more environmentally friendly options are being considered,
such as biodegradable golf balls, some sort of reclamation effort for catching all of the golf balls.
Larson expects the Pikes golf issue to be resolved this summer, adding that the DEC is likely to issue a statement on the broader concern. Steiner has also asked the agency to look into the annual Bering Sea Ice Golf Classic in Nome. In Fairbanks, I'm Dan Bross.
Experienced firefighters can earn up to $60,000 in a few months, which may seem like a lot of money. But considering their working conditions and hazards, many of them would say they earn every bit of their pay. KMBA's Jacqueline Estes talked with some of the firefighters mopping up the McHugh Fire south of Anchorage.
Everyone working a fire, from incident commanders to accountants, sleeps in tents. Firefighters sometimes camp just a short hike from the fire. And at most camps, everyone eats military-style field rations known as MREs, or meals ready to eat, three times a day. Firefighters go to the fire carrying all the food, water, and safety gear, including an emergency shelter, needed for that shift, which typically will be 12 hours long but can run to 20 hours. To qualify for the job, they have to show they can carry a 45-pound pack for 3 miles in less than 45 minutes. Firefighter James Ludecker of Fairbanks is a member of the Tanana Chiefs Conference fire crew. He says months before the fire season, he and other crew members start working out a minimum of 3 hours a day.
Sometimes we like to go for a hike for at least 45 minutes, just, you know, like a 45-degree angle. Or we like to go for like an 8-mile run, depending on, because we like to switch up what we're doing. We're not just going to concentrate like on biceps and, you know, chest. We're going to work the back. We're going to work the legs. The main thing I like to get the guys to do is work the lungs.
Ludecker says jogging up 45-degree slopes paid off at the McHugh Fire.
Thank God we did do the hills, because the fire we're on right now, it's just a good 45-minute hike straight up.
On scene, crews work to create a fire line, a strip of land maybe 30 feet wide with no fuel for a fire. They remove standing and fallen trees, brush, grass, even tree roots. They remove or bury embers and mix the soil until it's cool to the touch.
It's not a
a sprint. It's a marathon.
Cale Casey, who fought fires for several years himself, this season is a public information officer for the Alaska Interagency Management Team. He says he got his start in firefighting as a medic, where he saw many injuries related to overuse, as well as everything from blisters to bronchitis and pneumonia. Casey says the job is demanding, but firefighters are passionate about saving lives and property and become part of a strong fellowship.
You're away from home, you're away from your loved ones and family, you're missing the weddings, you're missing the birthdays, you're missing the music festival or all the cool stuff everybody else is doing, the boat trips and the canoe and kayak and fishing. You're out sucking smoke with the people who are also in love with their job, so it becomes a very tight family.
Safety is a top priority. Firefighters practice what they'll do if a fire overtakes them. They go over recent accidents and review the conditions that led to decades-old fatalities. Casey says many firefighters also contribute to the Wildland Firefighters Foundation, which supports firefighters and their families in the event of serious injury or death. Statistically, most fatalities occur between 2 and 5 p.m., when fuels are at their driest and fires are apt to pick up and roar. So Casey says firefighters take 5 at 2, a 5-minute break at 2 o'clock every day to think about safety.
Things get extreme at that time. That's also the time that we try to get our heads straight and say, do we have an escape route? Do we have a safety zone? Do we have lookouts? Are we in communications? Are we engaged for the right reasons? What's the end state? What are we trying to achieve? And we're learning how to disengage as a culture, how to say, maybe this is a time to step back and let this fire burn a bit. This is when people die.
Delbert Frank of Minto and a member of the White Mountain fire crew says sheer determination is needed to stay in the game.
It's a mental thing. If you see yourself at a wall where it's going to stop you from doing your work, you got to break through it.
The Chena fire crew is also working the McHugh fire, which has been contained. Protective equipment placed in nearby housing subdivisions has been removed. A 35-mile-per-hour speed limit remains in effect between miles 110 and 112 of the Seward Highway, where there's still a risk of falling debris, and pullouts outside that stretch of the road have been reopened. Reporting in Anchorage, I'm Jocelyn Estes.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. Tonight's stories can be found at our website, alaskapublic.org. You can also follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Liz Ruskin in Philadelphia, Laura Craigle in Unalaska, Graylin Brashear, Zachariah Hughes, and Jocelyn Estes in Anchorage, and Dan Bross in Fairbanks. Our audio engineer is Eric Bork, Wesley Early is our web editor, and I'm Lori Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
Apollo MT by Guardian Flight, Medevac memberships that protect you or a family member when there is a need for air medical transportation. Information available at apollomt.com. If you're looking for business opportunities in the government marketplace, you'll want to know about the Alaska Procurement Technical Assistance Center. Alaska PTAC helps businesses navigate the challenging process of the federal, state, and local government procurement cycles with offices in Anchorage and Fairbanks and delivers services statewide. More information at ptacalaska.org. This message brought to you by Alaska PTAC.
It's summer and time to get out on the water. Whether you're commercial fishing, heading to a weekend cabin, or tossing in a line to catch tonight's dinner, having a boat means regular maintenance projects, fueling, and cleaning. Alaska Clean Harbors reminds you to minimize waste and pollution during these activities. Ask your harbor master for waste disposal information. Find more at alaskacleanharbors.org. This message sponsored by Cook Inlet Keeper with funding from the Coastal Impact Assistance Program.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.